Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
From NPR and WBUR, I'm Peter O'Dowd in Phoenix.
And I'm Scott Tong in Washington, D.C. This is Here and Now. The world is trying to move on from fossil fuels with ambitious international goals the next 5 years and beyond. But what happens if you're a poor country that happens on a huge find of crude oil? We're talking about Guyana, a lightly populated nation in South America on the Caribbean coast. A big oil find, what pros call an elephant field, was discovered offshore about a decade ago. And the age-old question is, blessing or curse? Gaitra Bahadur has been writing about this. She's a journalist, author, and professor of English and writing at Rutgers. Gaitra, hello.
Hello, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. You were born in Guyana, again, near the top of South America, just east of Venezuela. Only 800,000 people there. That's about one Seattle. Tell us about life on kind of the day before oil. How would you describe the quality of life there?
So Guyana has been known to most outsiders for being the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere after Haiti. I was born there and grew up in the United States. And for most of my life in the United States, whenever I mentioned the country, most people said, oh, right, where Jim Jones happened. And being a spot for ecotourism, and that is how it was defined for the rest of the world, if they knew it at all.
And then things changed dramatically, of course, in 2015, when ExxonMobil announces what the industry calls an elephant field, gigantic deposit of oil off the coast of Guyana. We've heard about boomtowns. What does boomtown in Guyana look like?
Well, Scott, it actually looks a bit like gentrification on a countrywide scale. Mm. The value of land and housing has skyrocketed. It can cost up to $6,000 a month to rent a house in Georgetown or on its outskirts in the capital city of Georgetown, which is unthinkable. Just to put that in perspective, a security guard in the capital makes roughly $350 a month. And recently, wow, a rooftop restaurant opened that serves a cut of beef that costs about that much. And that just gives you a sense of the level of new wealth in the country, but wealth that is still set beside struggle for many Guyanese, and they are having trouble making ends meet.
And so the wealth benefits whom?
Well, the politically connected elite, sort of Guyana's 1%. So there is a widening gap between the rich and the poor. Alongside that, of course, there is a sense of possibility. There is a sense the world finally recognizes where Guyana is on the map and wants to do business with it. And all sorts of people have arrived from across the world. It's insane, the number and variety of people who see Guyana as a land of opportunity and are flocking there because of the boomtown.
Let me ask you about the hopeful scenario. Is there talk of we get to invest a lot of money in a modern infrastructure for clean water, the power grid, things that benefit a lot of people?
Well, the main focus of the government is energy and infrastructure. Most of the new money flowing into the budget has gone towards building roads and highways and a project to bring gas from Exxon's drilling to produce electricity. Blackouts are a source of dark humor in the country. They happen so frequently, and it has been an obstacle to doing business. So this has become the major project for the Guyanese government.
How do people think about the trade-offs? You know, I've reported from Venezuela, where a lot of people talk about what they call the oil curse, right? All this money feeds corruption, government officials on the take, huge wealth inequality, not to mention huge economic booms and busts, depending on the price of oil.
Well, Guyana is and has been such a poor country that many people see the short-term material gains, a massive opportunity to change the country's destiny, really. But local environmentalists are very concerned about environmental regulation. The activists have been suing the government to enforce environmental laws. So the trade-offs are definitely, you know, the economy versus the environment.
You know, it's easy, perhaps from far away, to think about the trade-offs. But when you went there, did you hear people saying, we've been poor for a long time, this is our turn to live the way so many other people do?
Yes, many people make that point, and they make it defensively. They see themselves as being lectured to by the rest of the world when they are not, in fact, responsible for most carbon emissions. So they see this as a sort of hypocrisy from the developed world, that now it is their turn to benefit from the profits.
Guyana's history in its colonial days, the British swooped in, leveraged the country's sugar. Now it is another natural resource, oil. How do people kind of have that conversation in Guyana? Do they frame it in those historical terms, or do they say, I hope people get their piece of the wealth this time around? How do they talk about it?
Well, our history is never far from us.
Yeah.
In Guyana. It's a small place that has been shaped and misshaped both by colonialism and by global Cold War collisions. This is a country that has been exploited for its many resources for centuries: gold, bauxite, sugar, and now this massive oil discovery. They are determined not to repeat the past, right? Does that mean having a greater share of the oil profits? And many feel Exxon has exploited the country in negotiating its profit-sharing agreement. Mm. Or is it about having a different vision of Guyana's wealth?
As you've written, Guyana has sought to monetize its natural resources, you know, its rainforests. You know, countries and companies can get carbon credits, right? But the amount of money for preserving trees is much, much smaller than the money coming in from oil. Is that the monetary reality?
That is the reality right now. Guyana has earned roughly $4 billion from oil since its discovery in 2015 and since Exxon started pumping in 2019. That is a massive amount of money for a country as small and as poor as Guyana has been. The amount of money for carbon credits, at least at this stage, is nowhere near that. And the choices that the Guyanese government has made in using that money are telling as well. It's decided to devote $2 billion to the construction of a natural gas-fired power plant.
Mm. Amid all this conversation, the reality of climate change is hitting Guyana's capital city, Georgetown, directly, I understand. In 6 years or so, a good part of the city is projected to be underwater. Regardless of what Guyana decides to do on oil or no oil, that's going to happen.
That's going to happen. And where has the government decided to spend its newfound wealth? There has been some money put towards climate adaptation, the building of sea defenses, but it is dwarfed by the amount of resources that have been put to the development of the gas-fired power plant, for instance, and the building of roads and highways.
Wow. And I just have to follow up. I mean, just this concept of the capital city being partly, largely underwater. How do you think about that? It's incomprehensible in a way.
It is stunning. And there has been some conversation about moving the capital to the interior of the country.
Oh, wow.
But there has been no action on that so far. Again, in the short term, what we have seen is a doubling down on fossil fuels, perhaps as a bridge to more renewable forms of energy. So there's sort of a gap between the reality coming straight at us and the vision to address it. 2030 is, again, 6 years away.
Yeah.
And what sorts of concrete planning are happening to deal with that?
We've been talking to Gaitra Bahadur, journalist, author, and professor at Rutgers University. Gaitra, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, Scott.